Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
You secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
I'm Jimmy Mayaha.
And I'm Simon Grant.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Welcome to Insider Exchange. We're here to give you the latest in live market matters and everything concerning markets, companies, investments, and everything in between. We're doing it all in real time so that you can get the most out of it. We're trying this. It's a new thing for us, but we hope that you really enjoy it. That being said, we're going to go straight into the conversation because we have a lot to cover in this week's market matters. We're going to be taking a look at Chinese CPI data, their debt package. We're going to look at the US's election results, the interest rate decisions from the US, and the CPI data expected to come out this week. We're also going to look at a couple of things we're expecting for this week from South Africa. We've got companies reporting earnings, and we're going to be looking forward to which of those companies we're most excited to see. But let's start things off, Si. Westpac finally out of business rescue.
Yeah,
very happy cool. days.
Happy days. Mm. I mean, 1,100 jobs sold, saved, mm. And I think a lot of folks, you know, who search the jobs, but it's the people who use Westpac. I mean, I find the store just overwhelming. It's just like there's too much stuff, and it's like random. Like I can buy sweets and I can buy rubbish bins and everything in between. But it is cool. No, it's that good to see.
It is. I love that we're able to save the jobs. We're able to continue to have the business operating. Obviously, the struggles there were largely debts related, but also perhaps they expanded too quickly, too soon, and didn't.
Yeah, I think they were growing too fast, mm. perhaps. And they were opening. And that's often the trick, is that you open a few stores, they do really well, so you want to expand rapidly. Mm. So you take on some debt, and then it all just starts to wobble a bit. And we've seen this story before. What they don't tell us, and of course we want the juicy bits, so someone's bought it and they had 18 expressions of mm-hmm. interest. What did they pay?
Who's the buyer?
Who?
A private buyer. And how much did they pay?
No, it wasn't me. If you're wondering, not me.
It was some 120 odd million rands worth of debt, and there was a lot that the business still had to contend with, but jobs are saved, yeah. The business is okay, and that's what we take from it. I think that's the biggest win that we can take. Alongside that, we've got a couple of other wins that have come through early today as well from the earnings guys. Before we get into the earnings guys and the numbers that we're expecting out this week, please remember to follow, subscribe, engage with us, send us your comments and chats. We'd love to chat to you. We can do that on the live stream, so please pop us questions, comments, anything. We really appreciate that. But let's get into those numbers. We've got a couple of guys reporting this week.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a busy week. And I'm just trying to get the full list. I had the full list up somewhere. There's so many of them that you now have to have a separate list just to make sure that you've got sight of all of it. Let's see. There we go. We've got Omnia and Raubex that came out this morning. We've got Vodacom coming out today as well.
Yeah, Vodacom's out.
Vodacom's out. There mm-hmm. we go. Bidcorp, Montauk, MultiChoice, Premier, and Storage will be tomorrow. Harmony Wednesday, Goldfields Thursday, MTN and Sanlam also on Thursday. And then we've got Emira and Raynet on Friday alongside the Burstone Group. It's going to be a busy week for South African companies.
Who's Burstone?
I don't know. We'll ask Marco. We've got one of the best analysts that we've got in the country who's carefully put this list together. We thank him for it. We've been trying to get him on the show for a while. We're going to keep trying.
Marco,
we know you can see this. We know you can hear us. Come join us on the show. But yeah, the company's reporting. I'm not expecting too many surprises this week. I think we've seen how companies have navigated the worst of the worsts in their own sort of spaces and spheres. MTN, I don't think we can get much worse than the updates we've gotten in the past about the Nigeria business and the
currency. We see Ghana and Uganda and Nigeria all coming through, so that only leaves us South Africa. Mm. Not a heck lot coming there. I'm interested in Harmony. I'm interested in costs. How's their costs doing?
Gold price they're going to use.
Yeah, and we've certainly seen gold take a bit of a swan dive after, $2,800 10 days ago or so. Yeah.
I'm so upset about that. I'm looking at a gold chart and I'm like, how do we... Well, I suppose part of the dive was for the US election. And I anticipated that if Trump wins, we'd see some dollar strength, but not that much.
Burstone was Investec property.
Oh.
How did I not know that?
Okay. Awkward. Name change.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of other companies doing name changes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, gold is weird, right? Because, I mean, surely we have uncertainty now, because let's be quite clear. Trump doesn't know what he's going to do. I mean, so what's he good for? He's good for crypto. He's definitely will be friendly to crypto.
He's good for Tesla.
He's good for, until they fall out. They're going to fall out, right? But crypto is good because he will fire the head of the SEC. They will reduce regulation and the tech bros are going to go bailing in. So the crypto should be good.
But that's hectic, because last week when we looked forward to the Trump election, you said that scenario around crypto and other things doesn't happen unless the Republicans sweep everything. So sweep the House, sweep the Senate, and then obviously the presidency. It's looking that way.
Yeah, so it looks like they might not get the House. Mm-hmm. I also think that if they do get the House, they're going to be... Now, remember, the House is 400 and...
30-odd seats, yeah, with the 100 balance going and to
then
the Senate.
No, they're 400-odd and then 100, yeah, in the Senate. Yeah, so it's a lot of seats. And these folks are up for re-election every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Basically, permanently election cycle. I can't help thinking that there will be some Republicans who are going to want to be seen to be independent of Trump, okay, and therefore maybe, you know, not go along with everything he says, just sort of in lockstep. So it depends on a majority if they get it and how much they get that majority. Mm. How big is it? I mean, we will find out in time. At this point in time, they don't have much of a majority at all, in truth, like literally a handful. They had to do how many votes to elect a leader. Mm. So we will find out eventually. But I think crypto is the easy one. Tariffs, I just don't know how much he's going to be able to practically do it.
Well, he's put Europe on notice as well. So that's going to be a fun exercise.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, look, everyone, Europe, China, the whole shebang. Also, maybe at some point, I mean, yeah, it's, what do they say? You must take him, not literally, but something. Mm. I mean, we just don't know. It's not like he has strong principles or morals or beliefs beyond making money for himself and staying out of jail, which are perfect. Those are good beliefs to have, stay out of jail. Yes, stay out of jail, make money. Those are definitely top 10 of most people. But we just don't know what he's going to do. So back to gold. Don't we have uncertainty? Interestingly, the 10-year ticked higher. So the 10-year is saying inflation's coming. Mm. The market is saying, nah, it's all fine. We're going to have lighter regulation, lower taxes for the rich and for corporates. What's not to love?
And this week we've got US CPI data. So we've got Chinese CPI data, and we'll reflect on that in a minute. But we've got US CPI data coming out this week, whereas last week's interest rate decision from the US came in bang in line with expectations. Jerome Powell's doing his thing. But you and I were having this chat before we went live. Does Trump care about inflation?
No, his voters do. But of course, he doesn't care about his voters anymore, does he? Because he's not standing again.
Well, and he can't run for a third term.
Unless he can get rid of, what's it, number 20? 28 of the amendments, which is the term limits, in which case we could have, I don't know, Trump Obama. I mean, Obama's still a spring chicken, man. That looks like 50-odd. Anyway.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's willing to come back. Yeah. But no. If that does happen, that potentially is going to be the wildest 2028 that we've seen. And maybe, just maybe, the Democrats want that.
I'm just too old for
maybe wild. The Democrats, because you look at the Democratic pool, and that's going to be another conversation we need to reflect on around how do you field a candidate that can, you know, kind of challenge for that position. But that's not what we're reflecting on.
So quick thing, House is currently 213 versus 203, and it is 218 to win.
213 in favor of Republicans.
Republicans. So they need another 5.
They're about to take the House.
But then, like, by one vote, eh? By like one seat. Anyway, we will. I don't know why gold sold off. It hurts my head. I mean, yeah, is the run over? And Jabulani Nzibande from Standard Bank, who's way smart at the charts, he's like saying, yeah, this gold's looking weak and there's some downside targets. Yeah.
I'm looking at it now. It doesn't look very strong either. I'm pulling up a chart now and I'm thinking, this is not where we want to be. This is just a market that says it doesn't know what it really wants.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's targeting, he says, potentially down to 2288, there's about.
2288.
Yeah, but look yourself a gold chart there. Since the gold is up. I looked it up this morning chatting with Nkunza. Gold up like almost 30% this year. I mean, gold's beaten tech and S&Ps and everything else. Pretty much been a straight line since around mid-year.
Since 2000, actually. Well, I mean, since $2,000, to be quite honest. Since breaking above, we broke above $2,000 in the first meaningful move was that 10% that we did in March of this year. And since then, we haven't even come down to test 2,200. We went up to 24, then we went up to 26, then we went up to 28. We might as well have gone all the way to $3,000 at this point.
So maybe this is just, you know, the usual. Gold's pulled back. It'll head off again. We'll see.
We'll We'll see. We'll see. Other things.
I did note that GLD has issued a sense saying that they have made new units. In other words, folks who are buying gold towards the end of last week, South African folks.
Ooh. Yeah, so okay. That's an interesting time. We should have Mushima back. She'd love to weigh in on this. Yeah. I know she'd absolutely love that. But let's look at some other things. We've gone through the era of Trump and CPI data out of the US, and China also put out CPI data today, but they also put out kind of a conversation around that debt package, which was less than impressive, to say the least. I mean, the market is kind of
confused. Almost $1 trillion of debt to municipalities.
I think so. There was a lot of conversation around it.
It seemed like a lot. I don't know. That seems like a lot of money to me.
China, to be fair, has not got a problem with dealing with a lot of money and redressing and writing off things. At the end of the day, we want one thing out of China, and that's Chinese economic growth. Just give us that. The rest of the world will figure out its life. Just please, please, China, just that. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah.
You can fix the housing crisis in your own time. Just give us economic growth.
I was looking for. Gold's up 29.4% year to date.
Oof. That's going to make our stock picks very interesting, because there is a stock in South Africa that has outperformed gold, and we're adding that to our wall later on in the show. But let's look at the other developments that we expected to happen this week. We said we've got those numbers coming out. We got that Boxer update this morning as well.
Yeah.
The listing conversations that's been in the works. We know, we've known about this. We've touched on this for a couple of weeks as well. The latest update.
So they gave us a website where you can go get details. They also told us what the price point is that they're planning to list at, and that is between 42 and 54 rand, which is quite wide. I mean, quite wide. Very wide, like 30% wide. Anyway, what the heck? They also told us, they gave us numbers of peeps you must phone at RMB, Absa, Standard Bank, and quite frankly, when you phone, the phone in the dealing room, just if it doesn't light up gold color, it's like you're not rich enough. they missed an opportunity. And I think, who was it? I think, was it Julieta Talivi when she was maybe still at Financial Mail? No, maybe at Currency. Anyway, she took Sean Summers to task and said, you know, why aren't you doing this through a Purple? Why aren't you approaching, you know, get grassroots, get individuals who shop at your stores, so that in that queue, there's a dozen people who have, bought shares, etc. And they were like, yeah, just seemed fairly uninterested. And the short answer is they want big shareholders coming in.
They really do.
Yeah, yeah. There's no traditional IPO-y type thing.
It's never going to go an easy way. You kind of need, especially if you're looking at where the business sits and you're looking at the requirements of that separation, you want to have enough to be assured of the fact that the business will continue. On that, quick shout out to Katlego and James who've joined the live stream. Thanks for jumping on this early in the morning. James, sort out your tax issues. James says he's in the line at SARS. So that's never, it goes one of two ways. You're either filing for a return or disputing something. So But back to the Boxer thing, the need for money, right? That brought up something else that was quite interesting from, I think it was last week's conversations or the week before, around the state of the NHI and the health minister wanting to use PIC money to finance the building of public hospital. Just no. Minister Motsoaledi, no, sir.
I mean, in the sense, no. I mean, so if you're going to build a hospital, which is a good asset, and I mean, Growthpoint has got a health division within their business, and it's quite a nice little division, and to own some hospitals is a perfectly good idea, as long as we can do it.
Until you have to figure out how to recover your money. Right? Because now I've built the hospital. Now you want to provide free healthcare. You want the doctors to serve in those hospitals at a reduced rate or at a free rate or whatever it is. They're not going to be able to charge their private rates. As the investor of the infrastructure, how do I recover my money?
From government.
No.
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 What worried me about it was that it kind of implied that PSC was government money.
Yes.
No.
No,
it is not government money.
Which is why I pose the question as a private investor. I'm sitting there as the PIC, as an asset manager, with a mandate to grow my assets, and you want me to finance this deal. I'm happy to finance the building of hospitals. I'm happy to finance any kind of infrastructure development project. How do I recover my money?
It's from the money that government has, and government just doesn't have the money. I mean, that's just the short answer. I mean, yeah, I National health insurance is a brilliant idea. We've talked about this before.
Absolutely.
But it's important that you have the money for it and that the money goes to it.
Exactly. And it doesn't get redirected to other places where it shouldn't be.
Like a few German sedans.
Right. Interestingly enough, I saw a number. And then numbers stick in my head. From 2008 to 2009, to date, SOEs, according to National Treasury, have received 520 billion, with a B, rands in bailouts. That's half a trillion rands in bailouts. Fix those, then we can talk from the PIC's
perspective.
Well, no,
that's only 1 year of NHI costs. But
there we go. So there's so much on that topic. We'll have to do a conversation at another time around that and look into that in greater detail. But we certainly know where we stand on using private funds as a grant or a bailout or however you want to call it. It needs to make commercial sense. It needs to make business sense. And more importantly, the pensions of South African citizens who've worked their entire lives to accumulate something to retire comfortably with needs to be protected so that they can survive and not become dependent on the state. That's the whole point of having a pension in place, right?
Yeah.
And on that note, that's Market Matters for this week. Please be sure to join us as we live stream this session every single Monday. Give us your thoughts, comments, feedback. We love to hear from you. We're going to still drop the rest of the show as we usually do throughout the week. But for this week, that's Market Matters. In the deep dive this week, we are taking a look at Visas, not the company that competes with MasterCard, but the thing that you need to get into someone else's country. Do we need them? Are they necessary? Why don't we have visas for every country when every country has visas for us and everything in between? Why don't we have visas for every country?
It's a good point because we think that they're good people.
Okay, so as an American citizen, I can come into South Africa without a visa for a certain period of time before having to then
probably
apply for a visa.
90 days, I imagine.
Yeah, 90 days. Yeah. Have you tried going into America for 90 days to say, I'm just coming here just to visit, and they let you in?
Even for a visa, I have to prove 500 million things to get in.
The application form for a United States visa asks you if you're a terrorist. They voluntarily ask you that. There's a question there. Are you a terrorist? Are you involved in, I think like there's like a section. Are you a terrorist? Are you involved in terrorist activities? Have you previously been involved? Do you intend to be involved? And yet we don't ask the same questions. It's a very interesting point because it was brought up that, oh no, we want to encourage people to come here and everything.
Sure, we do.
We do. But the reality is we're not a second tier or we're not second class citizens of the world, right? The same privilege that we are afforded to see other countries should be the same privilege other people are afforded to come see our countries.
Sure. But if we put visas in, and I got a perfect example, my sister-in-law and her husband live in France and they hate winter. Although he's from Ireland, he should be quite used to it.
He should be fine with that.
She's not. She's from Durban. She hates winter. And they will then sometimes just get out of it and basically take a credit card suitcase and go to the airport, and they go to somewhere they don't need a visa. And sometimes their place is Cape Town, and they'll spend 3 weeks and spend a fortune and blow up Cape Town with their euros. Mm-hmm. And if there was a visa requirement,
but this is the thing. You don't, to have a visa situation in place, you don't have to have a complicated solution. I think it's Singapore, if I'm not mistaken, that has a situation. It might not be Singapore. One of the Asian countries, you can arrive without a visa.
Yes.
By the time you walk through the airport, they've scanned you, they've done everything, the visa's ready, you're approved into the country you walk through. That's a system we can easily implement here. So we can still have
visas on arrival.
That's it. Visas on arrival is not an inconvenience to someone. If while I'm sitting on the plane, filling out that declaration of how much cash I've got in my suitcase, or waiting, exactly, I can complete the visa process form, especially if we have identified countries where we feel you are lower risk for us and we'd like to have a more relaxed visa regime for you. But the reality is we've got the technology and we've got the infrastructure to be able to have every single person clocked in on a visa. And wouldn't that solve part of the immigration problem that we are facing, where we say we don't know who's documented or whatever? Because I can guarantee you, not every single one of the undocumented people that live here came in via walking across the border. It's not practical. No. You know what I mean?
But you're 100% right. And the point is that do visas that we have to go through all that palaver for, do they catch the bad people or the scammers? Because I know people who have applied for Schengen visas and you've got to for example, accommodation. So you produce the accommodation, mm-hmm. you get the visa, you cancel the hotel.
That's it.
You need
you
money.
Get an invitation, a letter, you have the letter.
When I was going to when I went to France recently, you need a certain amount of money. So I just washed money through my current account, right? Mm-hmm. Move it in, move it out, move it in, move it out, leave a lot, look impressive, look, ooh, this man's a baller.
Yeah. And if we can do that as South Africans looking for a Schengen visa, it's clearly not a the visa system is not there to deter anyone at this point. If anything, I see it as...
And certainly not the bad oaks.
No.
Surely, because the bad oaks are good at scams.
And if I'm intending to come to South Africa to... Fine, let's use this as an example. If I'm intending to come to South Africa to buy a buffalo in US dollars, I'm going to have enough money to clear the visa requirements. If any country in the or any developed country with a higher exchange rate, even developing countries with a better exchange rate than South Africa, needs to evidence cash on hand, it's a far lower requirement than if we need to evidence it to other countries. Yeah. If I need to put down £1,000 to evidence to the UK, that's 22,000 rand. Someone in the UK that needs to put down 22,000 rand says, oh, only £1,000. Good, great. So it's not really like the requirements would be onerous on those that want to obtain the visa. Why can we not have visas on arrival?
Yeah, no, a perfectly good question. Nice and simple. You get here. And yes, some people will arrive and get sent home, but then, hey, you shouldn't have come in the first place. If you're an undesirable person, you probably know that.
Australia does it. They're not afraid to send people home. You can land in the country, get detained. Has anyone watched Border Control?
Hey, I mean,
one of the greatest shows.
I mean, back in the day before you needed a visa for the UK, I know someone who went to the UK and got sent home.
Mm-hmm.
They had particularly lied. The border official said, have you been by... before, and they said no, and they're like, all right, but you have, sorry, go home.
Okay.
Don't know why or how or care. You lied to me, just leave.
Go home at your own cost. So there's a way to get visas done for everybody without any problems, right? And then obviously the Minister of Home Affairs, Leon Schreiber, has now wanted to have conversations around nomad visas. Leon Amos Schreiber, yes, according to Google, has wanted to have conversations around work visas or nomad visas and people coming to kind of remote work from South Africa. Mm-hmm. Those that want to remote work from Cape Town because it's nice to work from a vineyard for those that can afford to. You know what I mean? So those sorts of things are a clear sign that we are moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Why then do visas still exist in their current form? And I ask that because politicians have had conversations about wanting to do an African visa. So, and I'm all for that. I actually think that'd be a fantastic idea to have one visa that says if you're an African citizen, you can travel any African continent. And if we're going to build a unified continent, that's a fantastic idea, right? Mm-hmm. Because Europe has got the same thing. They're one continent. They use one Schengen visa with the exception of Brexit and all the technicalities.
Yeah, but make it simple because then more people come. And you know what? Do we get some undesirables? Sure.
Send them back.
But do we currently get undesirables?
Yes.
Yes.
At least make money from them.
Yeah. Well, so that was my other thing. I mean, do states make money from visas? I mean, they do, but probably not enough to be meaningful.
Yeah. So you also, I mean, you want to encourage, I can understand wanting to encourage tourism. I can understand wanting to, you know, have those things. But the reality is some of those people that come here strike up business relationships that take our resources, that take our human capital, that take everything else. And putting that aside, I mean, we've both worked for international companies. You understand why an international company comes into South Africa, how much value it adds when they spend money here or build offices and infrastructure here. So you don't want to complicate and make life difficult. But the notion that we need to prove our human status, so to speak, to the rest of the world, when certain countries around the world don't need to prove their human status to us by virtue of the fact that, what, they're members of NATO, United Nations? What are the reasons?
What lack of the womb? Where were you born?
That's it, right? Yeah. So that shouldn't be a prerequisite as to whether or not people can visit the country or not. And we can, as we said, have a visa on arrival, very simple system, cost you... I mean, I think the one that they're doing in Europe, there's one where you pay something like £10 or €10 or something silly, where it doesn't impact your life in a negative sense. But you look at the South African visa, for example, the Schengen visa to go into Europe, that costs you 3,000 rand or more, right? Whereas if someone's coming here or someone's going to somewhere like Singapore, I think it is Singapore. I'm fairly certain it's Singapore. And you're paying 100 or even 100 euros. That's still less than 2,000 rand.
But it's also, so it's the cost. You've got to take time off work. And then, so we are fortunate. We're in Joburg, right? Mm. We can get visas for all the countries in Joburg. But if you live in Kwandagese or Durban or...
Or Mbombela, like, and you must drive from Nelspruit to Johannesburg to come do your visa application, go back, because you can't collect it the same day. You must come back 7 days later. That's an expensive trip.
Yeah.
If we had e-visas everywhere, that would solve the problem.
Yeah, we want e-visas on arrival. Bang, done.
That's it.
Okay.
And maybe that's what we should also be fighting for in other countries, to say, if you're a South African citizen traveling to other countries... As our own health, our own Home Affairs Ministry has relationships with these international countries, you should have that conversation as well, to say South African citizens should be allowed to have e-visa access in certain countries as well.
Yes.
That's it. That's where we stand on e-visas. And that's the deep dive for this week. And we wrap things up with Investor Insights this week. We are taking a look at understanding your credit score and updating our wall. So last week, we did the maintenance tax conversation, and it could have implications on your credit profile and all of that. And I think the credit side of it, there were some comments on our various social platforms. Some people were confused. Some people didn't care. Some people said it doesn't matter. And it brought up quite an interesting conversation, is does it really not matter? Because let's be clear, some of the big, in fact, all of the big ticket assets you want to buy, you're going to need some credit.
You're going to need debt. But even, I mean, if you're renting, they're going to check your credit score. I mean, there's loads of places where I mean, if you go work for some companies, they want to check your credit score.
You take out a cell phone contract, they want to take
a check. Ping your credit score. So it is all over the place. It is important. It does matter. And we've got a lot better access to it. I mean, 10 years ago, you had no idea what your credit score was. By law, all of the credit agencies have to give you, is it one a year perhaps? But like you go to someone like ClearScore or one of those, and truthfully, your banks do it. I mean, I don't know. It seemed, I think most of the banks these days have it built into their websites or their apps where you can actually get yourself a credit score. It's important because you will spot some things there which maybe shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. Like maybe Edgar says you didn't pay money and you're like, whoa, I don't have an Edgar's account. Now, is that an error from Edgar's? Or someone spoofed your name and ID and opened, you know, fake account, et cetera, et cetera. But also, it does matter. People care if you're going to do many things in life. The hard part is, particularly when you're starting out in life, how do you get a credit score? I mean, and it's things like, so insurance things will ping. I mean, there's all sorts of little things you can do that will get you a credit score. They don't actually require you to get debt. Because also, people say, well, get a credit card and don't use it. But then your utilization is low and that hits you and it just gets messy.
I think what you brought up was the most interesting part about it, and the most important part about the credit score side of it, is the fact that even if everybody's looking at it or not looking at the credit score, you still need to have that kind of metric in place, because you are measured by it to a certain extent. But more importantly than that is the point that you made around the fact that it's an easy place to check if someone has used your data in ways that they shouldn't have. If you suddenly have an account that's appearing
on there.
Not
your mobile data, your name and ID number.
There
data.
We go. Not your airtime and data bundles. But if you suddenly have something that is unexplained there, and that's the second part of the credit score, is if that happens, you've got recourse. You can go and speak to that creditor or speak to the bureau and say, guys, this is not me.
Yeah.
This is identity fraud. It's one of the easiest and most effective in terms of cost ways to
pick up on it.
To pick up on it. Because let's be clear, guys like ClearScore and the banks and that, you can access this information for free if it belongs to you.
And don't ever pay. I mean, they will try and upsell you all sorts of, no. You don't want the bells and whistles. You just want the credit score.
That's it, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't want to buy all of those things. I mean, I get emails on many a week from ClearScore. This and that, and buy this, and take a loan, and this. I just want to know my credit score. And now my bank gives it to me, so it's much easier.
Thank you, though, to ClearScore for not charging people for the service when they initially launched it. Because that's one of the important things as well, is, like you said, Si, you should not be charged to access this information about you. And when you sign on papers and you go for things like home loan applications, vehicle loan applications, they ask you, do you consent for us to retrieve your credit information? Because that is important. So Your credit profile and your credit scores are exceptionally important. And there are, as you said, there are ways to maintain that and improve it and manage the conversation, or at least manage your own credit profile so that it does count in your favor in the long term.
Yeah, and they will, in my experience, if your score is whatever it might be, the service will say, here's some ways where you can improve your score. You know, this is why you're only whatever it might be, 600 instead of 700 score. Here's what you can do. Here's et cetera, et cetera. So it's hugely important. And it is if you live in the world which has rands and cents in it, it's part of it.
Unless you're one of those people who has just won the Powerball last week, Friday, you won the 42.5 million rand. And in which case you'll be buying a bunch of things in cash. I suppose then the credit score becomes a little less important for you, but
yeah, look, it wasn't me who won it because I only enter when it's 75 million.
42. Well, it was 85 and it went to two tickets at 42.5 each. So maybe it was you entered.
No, it wasn't.
But yeah, if you are in the world of credit in whatever way, shape or form, or you are thinking about it in the long term, there are other things that you can look at as well from a strategic point of view. At some point, if you want to buy a large ticket asset and you don't want to have to use 100% of your money, credit score will be looked at, and it's important that you understand it. If you want us to do another session on that, let us know. Send us through some comments and questions around specifics related to a credit score, because we can tackle so much from improving stuff to removing things from the credit profile, but we really kind of want to give you the option to let us know what would be most important to you. Drop us some comments in our community pages and on our conversations. We'd love to hear from you around that. But we're going to get into our picks now. We're going to update our wall. We're going to look at adding some new picks and seeing if we adjust any picks. Last week, we adjusted ShopRite. We adjusted Sasol. We adjusted Northam. We moved around some local stocks. This week, locally, we are adding two new companies. Let's start with Richemont. They gave us numbers last week.
Yeah, Friday.
The world of luxury is seemingly going through the most. Not just Richemont, but I mean, if you look at just Chinese numbers as well, luxury is...
It's having a moment. What I like with Richemont is it's proper luxury. It's not handbags and other such silly things like that and whiskey and stuff. It is expensive watches that we can't afford. So it's simple in that regard. 6 billion euros in cash. I mean, just ridiculous.
That's a lot of money.
120. So pretty much 10% of their market cap is cash, maybe a little bit under, just like sitting there.
Means they can buy stuff. Yeah.
Well, they always have. So the Ruperts are just so incredibly conservative. I mean, yeah, you can buy stuff. I mean, but they are always just, this is just how they roll. They're doing deals with their online, which they've never really got to work. That makes sense. You're spending a lot of money on a watch. You want a cup of tea at the same time.
They sold the wine app business.
Yeah. So they're selling, merging, boom, boom, boom. And something will come of that. In time, that's never really worked. So China's their problem, and Europe to a degree, but absolutely it's China. I really like Richemont, and I always just look at these sort of sell-offs as opportunity. This is a stock that a year and a half ago was almost 3,400 and is now almost 2,400. So, you know, it's the same company. Sure, it's been down to 2,100 last year this time, but it to me, weaknesses in Richemont, which is my preferred luxury, is opportunity more than anything else.
And this is something you've said before, Si. When we had Chantal on the show at the time, you've said this around the fact that every time it kind of dips, and this was, some of it was advice from her as well, to say you'll get that correction occasionally. And when you get that correction, it's a good opportunity to buy and hold for a long-term view. Understanding that, of course, where we sit at the moment might not be an ideal spot for you, find your preferred buy levels and all of that. But we're liking Richemont. Where do we put it on our wall? We've got a couple of good spaces. I mean, we've got the like it space where we can kind of, you know, put it in there with all the other stuff that we like. We do have that blue chip status where it could be a blue chip stock. But we've also got a section on the wall that's easy money, where consistent dividend, not too much stress, not too much headache.
Actually, it's running at a 2.4% dividend yield, which for Richemont is high. But then you get tax bananas out of Switzerland, and then you've got to write a letter.
So is it easy money there?
So I don't think it's easy money. I think it's blue chip, surely. Come on. This is Richemont.
It's Richemont.
Yeah.
Okay. Richemont goes into blue chip. The other one that we're putting in there, this one's going to be very little debate, very little conversation on, is Capitec. I'm just going to cut through all the anticipation and all the waiting. That's going in blue chip every day of the week.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Every day of the week, even at 3,300 Rand a share.
Yeah.
Expensive.
Look at the blue chips on there, which we would throw ShopRite, we would
yes.
fix into there.
Yes, we've got those two companies. There on there.
They've never been cheap, ever.
That's it.
And Capitec
but a blue chip stock is not meant to be cheap, is it? It's meant to be a cut yeah, above the rest. And a cut above the rest sometimes comes with a premium.
Yeah.
Now, we look at Capitec's performance, more than 50% since January this year. If you had bought Capitec at the start of the year around 2,000 Rand a share, even at that expensive price, now at 3,300 Rand a share and the year still isn't over.
Yeah, yeah. And look, you know, price to book is 8.3, highest it has ever been.
Mm.
And if you look at our other banks, their price to books are 1.5, maybe 1.6, if you're ABSA, 1.2. But I mean, like, this is Capitec, man. Like, this is Capitec.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I like about our blue chip kind of status of stocks is for us, those are non-negotiables. Like,
yeah.
there's it's difficult to find fault in a company that has 33% of the population yeah. as its bankable clients, that is consistently growing, that is beating every metric quarter on quarter.
The stock is, and this stat's a little bit old because I pulled it up earlier, it's 10x in the last 10 years and mm-hmm. 10x in the 10 years before that.
There we go.
Is it 10x again? No, but like hold it.
Hold it, buy it.
Yeah.
Make sure you get in at whatever price is comfortable for you. Again, as you know, you've seen our disclaimers. It's not financial advice. It's stocks we like. It's stocks our community likes. And it's things we put on our preferred wall of picks. If you're going to take that, do with that information what you will, but do your own research, please. And consult a financial advisor if you need to. International picks.
Yeah.
We are looking at adding two new companies to our wall. The two new companies in question are, interestingly enough, both at $1 trillion status. One of them, I suppose, recently. I wonder if it was not $1 trillion status before the US election. Tesla, we have to. We did BYD last week. Elections happened. Elon Musk gained $26 billion in net worth. Tesla went up. Tesla.
So they weren't a $1 trillion status beforehand. They're now at just over a trillion. Why can't I can't spell Tesla? So there's a couple of things with Tesla. The first is that, you know, why was Elon all behind Trump? Because let's go right back in time. About 8 years ago, Tesla was voted the best LGBTQI company in California,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was even in the US. And Elon was proud about it. He tweeted it.
Okay.
Why? Well, because he wants to sell cars and he was buying his cars. Well, greenies and lefties in California. So he went and beat all nice to them. So has he had a sudden Damascus conversion or is he just following the money? He's following the money.
Mm.
He basically likes Trump because he thinks he'll get less regulation. Think around his self-driving, think around his satellites, think around his space trips, all of that. He just wants less. He wants government to get out of the way 100% and just sort of let him do stuff.
Mm.
At some point, Trump and Musk will have a falling out, surely. I mean,
okay.
I think they're far too big egos. They can't do this forever. Trump doesn't care about EVs or the environment. In fact, he quite dislikes windmills, weirdly enough. Musk was giving him money, so he's happy. So this is a $1.03 trillion company. There's only about eight of them, so it's quite important. It's on a forward PE of about 105. It's about 15 times price to book. I mean, what are you buying here? You're not buying, it's now worth more than every other motor car company put together. You're not buying a motor car
company.
You're buying a tech company.
That's it. I think that's another thing. Where the reason we had BYD over Tesla last week was BYD is still an EV company. Tesla is a data company.
Mm.
They're a data company. They're a tech company. That's why they're on the Magnificent Seven. They do huge amounts of data collection and mapping and all sorts of other things as a business, which will serve them exceptionally well in the future, I believe. If I'm looking at Tesla as a data company, I'm inclined to like Tesla. If I'm looking at Tesla as an EV company, overpriced.
But what do they do? Agreed with that. But what do they do with their data? What's the value of it? You know, Google sells our data to peeps and to advertisers and stuff. What does Tesla do with that data that they have? I mean, obviously they're looking for level 5 autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm. He had that pitch a month or so ago in Hollywood with his autonomous vehicle, which was weird because the first thing is that if you're building a car that doesn't have a driver in it, why do you make it look like a car that would have a driver? Why is it a two-seater that you sit in the front looking forward? Why can't we?
Because you can hold more people in the car.
But it was only a two-seater.
Yeah, but you can still fit more people in the car. So if it's a four-seater Tesla Model 3, I can fit two people in the front, two people in the back, and it's an extra seat I can monetize.
Put the seats on the side so we face each other, so we chit-chat.
Or fair enough, but he's got... front
and the back looking in.
That's it.
Anyway, so self-driving, look, Waymo's doing it. GM Cruise was doing it. GM's had to pull out because they ran over some people and denied it. Waymo's doing it, although those cars are, I mean, if you've seen a Waymo, cameras everywhere, etc. But I don't know, folks who've driven them, it works perfectly well. They say it drives like your teenage kid, which is pretty much how you want them to drive. Carefully, not the drunk teenage kid. The
scared, I was just going to ask, which one of those?
The scared teenage kid. I'd look at it as a tech company and I'm like, sure, but what's the tech? They've got millions and millions of miles of data from their users.
Yeah.
Useful. Can they sell it to others? Maybe.
They don't need to sell it. Allow me to take you down a Terminator road. Bear with me for a moment here, folks. Elon Musk builds an autonomous vehicle that can map out every road in every country around the world. So you've got that mapping system. All that data is collected. All that data is stored. You've got data centers. You've got everything linked to satellites and all of that, right? Starlink links to your Tesla. Your Tesla then links to your smart home if you've got a mobile home, those RVs. Right, you've got a Tesla RV or you've got a Tesla car. Now your car linked to your Starlink satellite. At the same time, your house, your Wi-Fi, your internet. We live in a digital age. Your cell phone, everything is run on your Starlink Wi-Fi. I can now manually from my cell phone control my cell phone. My car, I can control my house, my lights, everything else, right? But at the same time, with everything being so interconnected, there is a remote server somewhere in Wyoming in the US that can shut down your home because you haven't paid Tesla their bills. That's how you use the data.
Yeah.
The rise of the machines. It's not pretty.
Okay, but, so you were going there. Sure.
But you've got everything in place. Think about it. You've got Starlink in place. You've got SpaceX to launch the satellites and everything. Yeah, you can say we're planning trips to Mars and everything, but every time you send a rocket up to space, you can just throw a satellite in there along the way. Mm. It's the same trip. It's a cost-effective thing. It's like if you're in a quantum that's going from somewhere to Bree Street and along the way it passes Rosebank, you can get on and get off, right? It's a by-the-by. So you've got the data, you've got the satellites, you've got the autonomous vehicles that are all controlled and can be controlled remotely, which now means you can shut them down remotely, right? So if your Tesla is acting up or something's happening...
Now, you don't pay your bill. You don't even shut it. It just drives back to the dealership and kicks you out.
That's it. Or you've got... something really bad happening around the world of AI, which NVIDIA is now partnering on OpenAI with Elon. You're now going to combine artificial intelligence, supercomputing into a digital world, and you're building this entire ecosystem. Think about the Apple ecosystem. The reason the Apple ecosystem was so perfect was because Steve Jobs built a system where your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad, everything was seamless.
Your earphones.
You could do one thing on one device and have it on all devices.
Yeah.
Think about that in your everyday life. Your house, your kettle, you could be attacked by your kettle.
Mm. And small things, but like, and you can do, and I forget what the terminology is, but if you've got a power outage at home, you can draw power from your Tesla and power up the home. Because of course they got SolarCity, don't
they? There we go.
And the power wall and all of those things.
So that's how you use the data. And that's why Tesla is probably going to be the biggest data company, I think, ever.
Well, look, I mean, the other one's Palantir, and it's kicking ass in Palantir's case.
So that's it. Relative. And Palantir is said to be one of the stocks that are going to be watched by those that are in favor of Trump coming in as president. I don't know if anyone's in favor of it, but Palantir is said to be a stock that's going to benefit from Trump's presidency. I can only imagine Tesla would be alongside that. Elon, please, we beg you, do not turn into the Terminator. Turn into Terminator, I suppose. That was to prevent the rise of the machines. Do not create the rise of the machines.
Yes.
And the other stock that we're going to be adding to the list before we run out of time is Saudi Aramco.
Saudi Aramco.
Another $1 trillion stock. Saudi oil company. We have seen they've expressed interest in buying up Shell's downstream assets in South Africa alongside other places around the world. They're an oil company. The exact opposite of a green and sustainable company that we just looked at, but we're looking at them because we like them. I love the way Saudi Aramco just they've got money and they spend it.
Yeah,
on
and
stuff.
A 6% dividend yield. I mean, it is. It's actually come back quite a bit. I don't know how you buy it. But I mean, so it's trading on the Saudi Stock Exchange, Saudi Arabia Stock Exchange.
Which you can now access through the JSE. Thank you to Dr. Leila Faree and her team. Shout out to the JSE. We've got that integration with the Saudi Exchange.
Yes.
South Africa is progressive. We are those people.
Yeah.
In case anyone
forgot.
We
are those people. So here's the thing. Here's my concern. Aside from hating windmills, Trump is a draw baby draw president, right?
Okay.
He hates any form of regulation. Mm-hmm. He's going to say, got a national park with oil, no longer got a national park with all the oil. I can't help wondering if we don't see a lower oil price broadly over a Trump presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Because so Harris would have pushed for green, for renewable and all of those sort of lovely things. Trump's going to push for drilling.
So interestingly, you asked who owns Aramco. 16% of Saudi Aramco is owned by the Public Investment Fund in Saudi, one of our favorite sovereign wealth funds in the world.
There's like sovereign wealth in a whole different level. So is there a bear case for oil, and does that matter because Trump's only around for 4 years and, you know, yeah.
Oil has survived Trump the first time. What makes us think it won't survive Trump the second time?
Look,
it survived everything.
One day it's going to be weird. This planet's going to look back and like you burnt that much oil. Mm. But at the moment we burn like 98 million barrels a day. It's like a lot of oil. You know, Russia's selling theirs through India. Sure. But I mean, and the thing is, Saudi Arabia is the, and by Aramco, Saudi Aramco, they kind of in some ways control the oil price.
Yes.
Right? They could go switch off three or four wells and oil's 120. Yes. They could switch on three or four wells and oil's
10.
20.
Yes.
10.
And this is the other thing about the OPEC bloc is where it comes to production and producing at the cheapest rate, Saudi Arabia is unmatched. They can produce oil at below $50 a barrel and still be profitable, if I'm not mistaken. We'll get the exact numbers on that. But it is horrible to try and compete with them on a race to zero if we have to have a race to zero. So the oil market's not going to go anywhere. And I think we're also seeing a shift, Si, from, oh no, EV, oil is bad, we're all moving to electric, to now, oh, we can do hybrids, we can still do, you know? And when the whole EV craze came about, the OPEC bloc was like,
yeah.
Okay.
And Trump will be friendly with Saudi Arabia as well. Yeah, so maybe. I mean, weirdly, so there's only five analysts who rated, four holds and a buy. Mm-hmm. The average is 144. The stock's 117. I mean, the low is 133. They're all saying this is a cheap-looking share.
Okay. Yeah. So we like it.
Sure.
Do we like it enough to put it beyond liking it and put it in blue chip status? I know we just spoke about how those are typically more expensive costs, but if the PIF is backing you and you're the largest oil company and the prospects of this company just look fantastic.
I don't know that it
I don't know if it's international blue chip status yet.
Yeah, see, I don't think it's blue chip at this point in time. I think blue chip needs a lot of history. They certainly pay a good dividend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it needs to be, I would say, robust of product. And they're a single product maker, make oil.
What is the dividend yield like? Is it easy money?
6%.
It could be easy money.
It's not bad. And I suppose it trades in Saudi things.
Mm-hmm.
What's the Saudi?
Saudi currency?
It's not. It's Saudi rupees?
The real.
Really? Wow.
The Saudi real.
That's weird. It's weird how we got reals, rupees, dollars, or like the big ones, like used repeatedly all over the place. Okay, Saudi real, where it's a 19.8 billion market cap in reals. I like it. Yeah.
We like it. Cool. We like Saudi Aramco. We're going to add it to the wall. We have made a decision on Tesla as well. As a data company, we like it. As a EV company, we want to put it in the alternative space. There is a better alternative out there. It's BYD. We've kind of navigated that, right? That being said, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Please remember to like, subscribe, follow, do all those things. Engage with us. Let us know what you think. We are going to be taking a break. We're going to Don't worry, we'll give you enough time to prepare mentally. We're going to be taking a break for the Christmas period. We're going to do a special Christmas show before we do that. But we're going to be building up to that over the next couple of weeks. But until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.